flat alcoholic. Oh my God! Isn't it, this is crazy, like, when I'm in a meeting and there's a topic of discussion, I can get right on it. Bam! I got, oh yeah, I've done that, I've done, I can relate. But when you get up here, there's always this little nervous energy going on because you know it's about to get on. You know? And it's my chance to let some of the things that I'm going to speak up tonight out here because I've recovered from those things. Okay? But it's important that I share those things with you because what's recovery without a story? Right? I could just jump in and talk about the big book and all these things and I sponsor this and I do that and I go to these meetings and all this stuff. And I'll get to that. But I think it's important that I identify about how sick I was when I got here because what works is a loving God as he expresses himself in his group conscience and those 12 steps and those 12 traditions and the 12 concepts. They work today. Right? The meaning behind the meaning. The application behind the story. You know, that stuff works. So, you know, one, I'm going to say I'm really grateful to be here. My sobriety date is, well, this time around, is, many of you know, you're like, yeah, we know that, yeah. 10-1-2015 is my sobriety date. So I've been sober a little while now. But it's not my first sobriety date. There have been many of sobriety dates over the years. My very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think I was 29 years old. And I walked into a group in the San Fernando Valley area, and it's called the Chandler Group. The room was filled with smoke. I was 28, 29 years old, and I was dying from this disease, from a cocaine addiction. Dying. Absolutely destroying me. I weighed about 162 pounds, sopping wet. I had burnt marks of the pipe all across my lips. And I was drinking every day. And I only worked on the weekends, so I had all week to just get high and get loaded and run the streets. I was a big street runner. I loved the nightlife, man. And, you know, the nightlife for me ended at probably about 26, 27 years old when I moved down to L.A. because I crossed the line down there, and then it was never sleep time. I'd wake up at 8 o'clock, and I'd go through the whole night getting loaded and drinking, and I'd run the streets, and I was just a street guy, big old night out. That was my life, you know. And when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was desperate for help. But the one thing that I couldn't allow to work in my life was how the word honesty needed to be in my life. I needed to know what that meant. And I heard it from you people, but I couldn't talk to it. I used to have people come up to me and they'd be like, hey man, what step you working on? Oh, I hated that because like I never worked on any step. I thought it was okay just to suit up and show up and be in the meeting and share all out the side of my neck. Like, oh, like I'm so emotionally, like I'm this guy on stage. I just want you all to know how much pain I'm in. I had no recovery, and I couldn't stay sober. And I tried, and I'd go in and out for about 7 or 8 times, and then finally I got a couple of years, and I roped into my first marriage at that time. And poor girl, you know, really. I just, like, I had no business being married, because what happened with me is I grew up in a very small town called Guadalupe, right? And I was from a very dysfunctional family. So my mom's an alcoholic. My dad is a rageaholic. It's just crazy atmosphere of ism running through the house. And I don't really recall them drinking as much, but I do remember the beatings that I took. I do remember the abandonment that I felt. I do remember the insecurities that I grew up with. I do remember shutting down. I couldn't remember from the time I was in probably 6th grade until I got into the Marine Corps when I was 17. That's a blur. It's a freaking blur. I couldn't remember it because I shut down. I went inside, and I was broken and didn't know it. I'd smoke that weed and drink that beer, and you know what? I don't know if I was escaping my issues or not, but I can tell you this, I enjoyed it. Because when I took the weed or the drink, I was instantly exhaled into a position of, I'm okay. This is right. This is perfect. I didn't have to feel anymore. I felt great. I just had to make sure that I stayed connected with the people that were partying all the time so I couldn't look at me. And that went on for years. Went on for years, you know? And I dragged that lifestyle into my first marriage, my second marriage, you know? And growing up in the Guadalupe area, I fought every day because I was this little scrawny kid. I was Caucasian complexion. I had a giant afro. Like, my hair was all, like, puffed out. And I was easy to be picked on. And I had to learn how to fight every single day, so I had anger issues, too, on top of that. Classic alcoholic, right? Anger, insecurities, what's all about, you know, us shutting down. And when I found that lifestyle, it fixed me for a long time because it made me feel okay. I didn't know anything that I was really, truly on a self-destructive pattern in my life and that I was going to take some hostages along the way, right? You know, start thinking that if I get married to the right girl, right? I love shiny objects, by the way, right? Shiny objects has got me in a lot of trouble, right? Because I'm like, well, they look good on the outside. And as soon as we get connected, they start telling me how to live, which made me feel about this big, right? And it's like I didn't know how to connect with myself. I had no clue. I was completely lost. And the more drugs I did, the better I felt. I would stay up all night. I took these little short jobs, like waiting tables. I would work 4 hours a night and party all day and all night, sleep for a little while, go in and do it again. And people would ask me, what do you want to do with your life? I'm doing it. This is ambition at its best, man. Like, that's the top mark for me. That, like, people around me were going to college, they were getting educations and stuff like that, and I couldn't relate, you know? I wanted to be hip, slick, and cool because that's what the cool people did. And I, you know, like, I hear people, they have heroes. Like, I hear Lee talk, and he's like, Clint Eastwood, you know, my hero. John Wayne's my hero. Yeah, I get it, man. You know, there's a lot of guys out here that, like, that get involved with that type of thing, right? You know who my hero was? Remember the show Starsky and Hutch? Right? It wasn't Starsky and Hutch. You know who it was? Nope. Huggy Bear. That was the pimp, right? That like, for whatever reason, that was attractive. I wanted to be cool like that, so I grew up my fro. In high school, I just thought it was the deal. All the girls really loved my curly hair, too. It was kind of cool. And I was getting a lot of attention, right? I started to, like, you know, feel like I belonged. But the whole time, I didn't know that I was running from me. I had no clue. You know, I just wanted to live. And I hung around with so many different ethnic groups because at that time, that's what I needed. I didn't have a mom. I didn't have a dad. I was running away from home all the time. I lived under the bridges. I hitchhiked. I cat-howled for money. I learned how to be very savvy streetwise. You know? I remember one time I ran away from home. I was about, 13 years old, maybe 14. I'm not going to school. I couldn't read a lick when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was tough, you know? My reading comprehension was zero. Right? I knew how to be a class clown. I knew how to make you laugh. And I knew how to size you up and be able to adapt to you quickly so this way I could be okay. That's street. That's what street people do. That's what I did. Right? And I had this little candid pitch about, you know, going to parents or whatever. Hey, I lost my folks. I don't know where they're at. I got separated from the zoo. I'm over in Santa Barbara hanging out with the bums and the winos. Right? Because they're teaching me this stuff. Those are my heroes, man. People would drive by with cars and beautiful whatever, you know, and I'd go, how do you do that? How do you do life? I was that insecure. I was completely broken. And then I had a great idea. I had a friend of mine. He says, hey, you know what? Let's go into service together. Right? I want to get out of Santa Maria. At that time, living in Santa Maria, I'm all 17 years old. I'm like, yeah, let's get out of here. So we go down to the recruiter. I couldn't even pass the test. You know? And so he gave us the test. He said, study this. Study this. I freaking passed, barely. But I got in, and I did boot camp. Like, there's no cheating in boot camp. You freaking man up and get it down, okay? And I really wanted to prove to myself that I could be something. And that was the first experience that I ever had about self-esteem. That I was worthy. That I could actually do something. And I continued to party and do whatever we do in the service, you know, and all that stuff. And then I got married and got hooked on crack. And I'm going through this quickly because I want to get into other things. But got hooked on drugs and crack. And man, my life was just a big old pipe dream, you know. I got into prostitution. No, I wasn't selling. I was buying, right? And like a lot of guys won't sell. They won't say that stuff. I had intimacy issues, man. I had to be out there because I did not know how to connect with another girl. I did not know how to connect with other people. I was broken. Don't you understand? I'm doing all I can just to survive. Right? And it's just easy that way. You go in, you pay for it, you give what you need, and you leave. Easy peasy. There's no warm-up, no walking across a long hallway, asking a girl what her number is. You know, none of that first date stuff, first kiss stuff. Because I'm uncomfortable. I don't know how to do that, but I know how to walk up to somebody I don't know and ask them for money. How crazy is that? And the whole time I'm drinking, I'm using, and I'm just trying to get fixed. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it takes a broken person like me, and it starts to return me slowly. It gives me tools. It gives me purpose. It gives me a chance to get honest. It gives me a chance to, like, see exactly what it is that I need to do in my life. Right? And I got glimpses along the way. Man, I've been doing this still since 1988. I think I've been sober half the time. The other half I haven't. You know? You'd think I would learn something, but I didn't. I never worked any steps. When I showed up in Santa Maria in 1985, we had that big earthquake down in San Fernando Valley, and I was married for my second time. And I don't even know how I was able to be married, number one, because I'm broken. I have intimacy issues. But guess what I married? A gal that was broken and had intimacy issues, right? And our marriage was completely dysfunctional. She hated me smoking weed. She hated me drinking. I'm not doing the cocaine anymore. So I think my life is manageable because I'm not doing that stuff, right? The marijuana maintenance program is the worst program around, man. If you're doing that, get rid of it. It's false gold, right? And it's easy to get, easy to maintain. Now that it's legal, let's just get that done, right? Let's go do some of that stuff, you know? Because that's me. That's how I think. I'm always looking for the easier, softer way. That's what Glenn wants to do. The easier, softer way because guess what? I don't have to look at me. I don't have to do the real work in here, the inside stuff that you guys talked about. I'm getting glimpses along the way. I'm trying to do Alcoholics Anonymous. People in here are trying to help me, right? I've had sponsors but didn't do anything that they asked me to do. They give me direction, I do the other thing. And they keep loving on me no matter what. It's okay, Glenn, just keep coming back, you know, and I thought that was enough. I thought doing that was going to be enough because I got, you know, I got involved in sober softball, I got involved with the cliques of AA, the barbecues and all that, and I think I'm working a program. There's nothing against that. Don't get me wrong. Get involved in that, right? That could save somebody's life. Teaches them how to become a part of, right? But I'm still not working on the inside. I'm in my 30s. You know, the current wife that I have at the time is pissed off at me all the time. I'm selling automobiles. Yeah, I ended up in the car business. I'll figure, right? A slick-talking guy like me ends up in the car business. And I spent 26 years in the car business. It came easy for me. Because the one thing that I had that a lot of the other guys didn't have was how to size people up and take their money. Honestly. It was real easy for me to do. I just had it to sound good, look good, make sure I talked a good game, and I made a great living at it. And I showed up always loaded. Always. I never can be without the weed and the alcohol. I had to have it. But I think deep down, I'm okay. Don't you understand I got the house now? Right? Don't you understand I got the wife now? I got kids. He's going to school. He's doing good. I'm a part of his life. I'm starting my own business. I inherited like a big chunk of money in like 19, it was like 19, I think that was about the year 2000, right? And I'm driving around Corvettes. I'm going to meetings thinking I'm the shit now, right? Because now, like, I think I know something, right? Everything's been handed to me, right? And I'm good. Life is good. I got a home. I got this. Because I'm looking at the outside stuff that makes me feel good. I'm still not doing the work on the inside, man. It's not clicking, right? Everything's okay. False gold, man. It's shiny. It's pretty. It's okay, we just buy another one. It's okay, we just can do this. And there's nothing wrong with being ambitious. There's nothing wrong with having success. There is nothing wrong with going after your dream, making things happen, starting your own business, making money. There's nothing wrong with that. But when it owns you, and you think that's what's validating you as a person, as a human being, that's all there is, take a good look, man. Right? Because sooner or later, that stuff's going to stop working. That's my story. It stopped working. You know? Everything that I thought that made me a person was gone. And I hit an emotional bottom. In 2006, I had about 7 years of sobriety at that time. And I was gambling. I had a gambling addiction. I still had that sex addiction, even though I was married. I'm not proud to say that, but that's my truth, right? That's my truth. And I'm not very faithful. I don't have any integrity. I'm not very honest. Because I'm crippled. I haven't done any work. Nothing on the inside has been fixed. I've been given an opportunity to do well in life, and I took the easy way out. And the one thing that's always been there, because now the ex-wife who I was married to, she's gone. So as time went on and I went out and drank, I came back. When I drank, man, I drank one time and I just stayed sober for a while. And then we got some friends who were normal people, right? Some of that normal stuff. And they'd come over to the house, we'd have barbecues and I'd drink a little bit. Well, fast forward about year six of that, I can't put the bottle down. And I'm looking in the mirror going, oh, God, I can't stop drinking. This shit's got me. I am at grips with the progressive illness that they talk about. Because I'm remembering all this stuff that I've been to meetings about. Here, I can be the parrot. I can sound it. I can remember the stuff that you guys said. And I'm looking in the mirror, and I think I'm just the biggest piece of crap that ever lived. Because I'm physically addicted. I can't stop. You know? And I feel horrible. And the ex-wife's mad at me, right? Or current wife at that time, mad at me. Because I'm never home, and when I'm home, I'm not home. That was the thing. You're home, but you're never home. I get one day off a week, and if I didn't get called into work, that's car filled, you know? And I didn't know how to develop a relationship with people. Right? Because I learned stuff from this talk, and I stayed broken, even though I was getting older, and was learning how to adapt to life a little bit. Right? I knew how to, like, go to work every day. I knew how to put some money in the bank. I knew how to pay some bills. I knew how to do those kind of things, but inside, I'm taking the root, and I'm dragging it with me over time. And so as I'm into the end of my drinking, I want to say, so I'm into the end of my drinking, and I remember looking in the mirror and telling myself, man, you got to stop because you're going to die. Man, you're going to stop, you're going to die. Man, you're going to stop, you're going to die. And I would do that over and over and over, and it lasted for a few years. And then cancer hit me, right, for the second time. And I had it in my throat, so I quit drinking. And I called a friend of mine, and I said, hey, man, I need help. He goes, well, how long have you been out for? I said, about the same amount of time that it's over, about 7 years or so. And he said, well, how about I come pick you up? And I thought he was going to take me to, like, Denny's or something. He took me to a meeting. Freaking meeting of 1600 Club in Santa Maria. And I walked in, I was so embarrassed because everybody was still sober when I left. And I looked around the room and I said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. shit. Oh, okay. I'm like, all right. I continued to drink after I had surgery and radiation, after processing through a fatty liver. This is how stubborn I am. I had to go through all that. Medical stuff, fat liver, you name it, man. It was here, and I'm still going, I got this, man. Don't you understand? I don't want to lose the feeling because I don't want to do the work on the inside. So what's easier? Right? The easier, softer way. But I'll just do this. I'm making deals with myself. I'll just do this. I'll do that. I'm false, man. Like, I don't want to surrender. I don't want to concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. That is the last thing I want to do. Like, I can look at the first step and admit, yeah, I got a problem with alcohol. Yeah, my life's unmanageable when I drink it, when I don't. Right? But the step before that step, the conceded part, the surrender part, to really know that I've got to let go absolutely, like chapter 5 talks about, right? We stood at the turning point. We asked for his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I have to get to that spot. If I don't get to that spot, this is just fantasy land. I'm sorry. That's my experience. But it's true. It's fantasy land because I think I still got something. I think I still can manage to control my thinking. I think I can still control my character defects. I think I can still manage Glenn. As long as I don't do this, as long as I look good doing that, as long as you see that I'm okay, and I'm falling apart on the inside. It wasn't until I really got completely honest with myself, right? When I came in October 1st of 2015, I had so much fear, so much anxiety, so much brokenness that I started going to a therapist, and she was the one who introduced me to go back to AA. And I had been going in and out of AA, raising my hand, for 2 years. 2 years, madness. People, how many people here saw me do that? Look around you. They all saw me. And I would get 2 days, 4 days, 28 days, come back. And I kept, when are you going to get 30 days, Glenn? And I kept coming back because I knew it worked, but I just couldn't let go absolutely, right? But once I got to that surrender spot, that sweet spot, when you know that this, there's no more back pocket plans, man. Like, you're out of plans. It's just, you've hit a wall. I'm 54 years old. My ex-wife, now is my ex-wife, she leaves as soon as my son leaves the college. So I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a worker amongst workers. I get sober. We go to a therapist. Therapist says, just give him a chance. She says, I don't want to be married to an alcoholic. Not even a recovering alcoholic. I'm over it. I have no hope for this guy. He's like, well, he's doing a good job. No, I'm done. When our son leaves the college, I'm out. And she lived. She left. And I remember the day that she left. I came home one day from work. I didn't think she was going to leave. Come on. Who's going to leave me? And you. Don't you know I'm a price baggie, man? I got intimacy issues. I don't know how to talk to people. I got anger issues. I don't put anything into a relationship at all. Right? I'm selfish and self-centered. And I'm full of fear. And I need you. You make me feel like I need to be here. Right? She leaves. I'm in the fetal position in my room, crying my eyes out, full of fear and insecurities like crazy. And I'm not thinking, oh, I'm going to miss her. You know what I'm thinking? What am I going to do? Where am I going to live? How am I going to do life without this portion of the finance? What's going to happen here? I never could stay sober unless any of this stuff happened. Everything needed to be stripped from me. I needed to learn how to stand on my own 2 feet. I needed to take responsibility for my unmanageableness in my life. I needed to get down to causes and conditions and honesty in my life that I didn't want to look at. And that's where it started for me. And I started going to meetings, and I had like 7-8 months. I took a secretary commitment, and then I got a year and a half, and I took another secretary commitment. And these secretary commitments, they were like speaker meeting commitments, right? And it helped me because of the fact that I needed to get out and go to meetings to find people to fill those speaker spots, and it allowed me to get out of myself, and allowed me to get into you, and it helped me not worry about this crap that's still behind me that I haven't worked through. That's still there on the surface. But God gave me a reprieve from that. He gave me a break. Right? He said, hey, your ex-wife's going to be okay. We're going to take care of her. Your boy's doing great in college. You're gonna have a wonderful life. At 32 days of sobriety, I'm out fishing in the Kern River with a guy that's got like, I don't know, he's got 30-some years now. But he had close to 30 years at the time, and he started loving on me. We went out there. I was crying, and, you know, it's a beautiful sunny day, 70-degree weather. It's a gorgeous day outside. We're doing trout fishing, and I'm crying because my life has fallen apart. And I remember him looking at me, and he said, eh, put your line on the water. It's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. You're going to be fine. Stay sober. Go to meetings. Help somebody. Okay. And that was the start of me of allowing somebody to take direction, like just little simple stuff. Do the next syndicated right thing, dude. Well, what would that be? Don't go to a liquor store. Stay away from the prostitute houses, huh? Do the stuff that you're supposed to do to build integrity that builds esteemable acts instead of unesteemable acts. And you'll get somewhere. You'll start to feel better in your life. Right? And I can talk about those things today because I don't do those things anymore. Okay? They've been relieved from me. I'm not bothered by those things in my life anymore. I don't need to have those false intimacies of relationships anymore. Because I'm doing the work, and I'm so excited to tell you about the work that I've been doing lately. But it took some time as I started getting wind in my cell and take commitments at meetings and started to take directions. The people that I didn't like when I got here are my best friends today. How did that happen? Because my view changed. Because I worked the 12 steps. Because I started to do the work that it took to stay here. Step one, principle behind step one is honesty. I need to learn that. I didn't know that. But how do I stay honest? It takes time. You know how you stay honest? Hey, man, you know what I did again today? Hey, man, you know what I did again today? Those defects of character are still ringing my life, and I'm taking what I've learned in the streets into Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm not changing completely. I'm in transformation because now I've got some hope. There's wind in my sail. I'm starting to believe that there's a process that could be healing, right? And I'm starting to see that this thing works. So I just keep on slowly letting the things that were controlling me out of my life, right? Now, I haven't arrived. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. But when you do work in recovery, right, meaning work, right, 12 steps, you read daily, you do meditation, you go help others, you sponsor people, you're in the pocket, you're doing your life every day based on sobriety, you're building a relationship with your God that you didn't want in the beginning, that's staying in recovery, right? I stop that, guess what happens? All those images come back. All those lies that go in my head, all the stuff that I don't want to look at anymore start coming up, and then the fear starts to take over. And then it's not 1, 2, 3, 4 through 9, it's 12, 10, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and 0. Now I'm untreated. That happened to me in year 4. I got all pissed off because I've arrived. Don't you understand? I'm doing meetings. I'm sponsoring people. And then cancer hit me again in 2019. I've had it 3 times in the last 16 years. I'm lucky to be alive. I don't get it. People die from this stuff. And I'm still alive. Sometimes I just go, man, that still sucks. Right? But hey, I don't know. God's in charge. I'm not. I believe that today. And I had to go through all those things today to start building my life. So in year 4, I get all upset that it's back. I'm mad. There's a few beers in my son's room because he drinks occasionally when he comes home. Think about it. It's not in the refrigerator. It's in his freaking room getting warm. Who does that? Like, that wouldn't last 2 seconds. And like, not warm. It's going, right? I know he's coming home. He's been working hard. He's a part of the Fresno State Marching Band. He's working hard to get his degree in music. And I'll talk a little bit more about him in a minute. And so I said, well, I'll just put a couple beers in the fridge for him because I know he likes to have a beer when he's dinner or something like that. No big deal. And I didn't think of it. And then I got the news not long after that that I was sick again, and I was angry, but guess what happened? Instead of remembering where I came from, in a moment's notice, on the second paragraph from page 24, I did bring the book of truth for a reason. I guess I'll open it now, huh? This is what happened to me. No, it's not a break. Okay, page 24. This is what it says. As the fact is that most alcoholics, for reason yet obscured, right? We don't know. Calamity, whatever you want to put it in, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with the sufficient force of memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. So what happened to me was the first thought, because I didn't have a relationship with my higher power that I call God today, was to pick up that drink. And I remember taking it out of the refrigerator, and I slammed it down. I was so angry. I said, God, give me a reason not to do it. And this voice showed up out of nowhere. Not like from speaker distance, right? Inside, right? Right inside. It says, you know what? What about all the stuff that you've been doing lately that's been good? What about all those guys that you're sponsoring? What about the meetings that you're running? What about the life that you have today that's worth something? What about the trust that you've built in your relationship with your sons? And I said, my roommate came home at time, take me, do something. I go to a meeting, I tell him myself, I almost missed a miracle, because in that meeting, there was a guy in that meeting who was suffering from the same disease that I had, who had answers for me that calmed me down. I could have picked up a drink and missed it. But because I got a little more wind in my sail, and I got some. You people always give me hope when I don't think that the hope is going to be there. You show up in the ninth hour, man. The last moment of truly, right? My God's looking out for me, and I don't want to see it. I'd rather not, you know? And so I go ahead and I receive the help that I need to get. We get on our way. We do the chemo. I go on remission. And as I was getting out of remission, I have a really good friend. I've asked him to sponsor me several times, and he said, I don't want to ruin the relationship that me and you have, but I'll be your spiritual advisor. What can I help you with? All that. And we started a really good friendship, and he gave me some tools, and he said, you know what? Why don't I give you this workshop on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? It's going to take you from the first 124 pages to talk about the first 12 steps, and you're going to highlight and pause, and it's like a workshop. I've never done that before, so sure, that sounds great. Man, did it turn me on. Like, I started to hear it. I started to see it because I didn't give up. Because I was willing to put forth the effort that it took to stay here. Because I'm run out of gas quick, man. Like, I'm a quick study. I'll get it going, and I'll catapult into the next dimension and think I've arrived. No! Got to keep growing, right? We got to keep searching. We got to keep finding a way to be here and to help others in a way that is useful, not only to you, but to me. Right? And I had to learn the hard way, man. You know? And on page, where is it at? You got me going now, man. Shoot! Let's see here. Page 55. I want to talk about page 55 real quick. It says, we're fooling ourselves for down in every woman and child is the fundamental idea of God. It says it's already there. Right? This is step two in re-agnostic. It may be obscured by calamity, right? As I'm speaking to you now, all the stuff that I'm bringing into Alcoholics Anonymous that I think is working for me, that's not working for me because I won't allow this loving God in my life to take control of the stuff that very well has the power of me to stay sick. Right? And it says, my pomp, my ego. Ooh! You know what's crazy about Alcoholics Anonymous? Like alcoholics themselves? Man, I love this. We got big egos with insecurities. What the hell? How did that happen? I don't get it, man. That's crazy, right? So I'm keeping this God away from me throughout my whole life and in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then worship of other things, property, prestige, right? As long as it fixes me, I'm good, right? Okay. But in some form or another, it is there. So I can't remove it. So if it's already in me, the book says it's already in me, but I'm not coming to believe in step two. I came to believe. That's already happened. So if I think about this, if I work step one, and I'm really, truly powerless over alcohol, my life is unmanageable. This is my experience. Take it from a guy that has hard knocks over and over and over. And I concede it to myself that I'm really an alcoholic, and with a drink and without a drink, my life is over if I pick up a drink. Like I know that feeling. Then I got to allow myself to experience this power that's within me already. Because came to believe is past tense. It's not a current event. I didn't even know that until year five. I had no idea. I'm coming to believe, but where's it at? Why can't I get fixed? Where's this thing at? How come it won't take my defects to character? I'm that guy. Right? But what I failed to realize is that my pomp, my ego, my worship of other things is still working on me all the time. And the only way that I know how to heal is through the quick fix. But my defects of character are getting better, right? I'm not acting out every fourth day, every week. Now it's like once a year, once a month, like whenever, right? But it's manageable, and I'm still justifying my behavior. Until I went over to a friend of mine's house, who's in the program, who's a well deal younger than I am. Right? So this is where one alcoholic talks to another. I get over there and I get honest about what's going on with me. And he says, well, where's God at, man? Where's he at? Are you asking him to take the seat up from you? Are you allowing him to work in your life in all areas of your life? Are you still acting on stuff that makes you feel bad? Or what's going on? That was the start of a process in my life where I said, okay, let's get focused on step 11. Not only is step 11 great for spiritual awareness, right? That's the principle behind step 11. So I did some work earlier this year with a few guys. It was Drop the Rock. And in there it talked about the principles behind the steps. Number one was hope, or honesty. Second was hope. Third was courage. Faith, then courage, then integrity, willingness, brotherly love, forgiveness, forgiveness, and then perseverance is step 10, and 11 is spiritual awareness, and 12 is giving it away, right? And so, during this last year in January, I'm like, okay, I need help in these areas, because why do I feel still broken? Why do I feel still lonely? Why do I feel still not really like things aren't changing completely for me? Why am I still always in that spot of insecurity? So I started reading some books, right? And they're self-help books, but they correlate well with 6 and 7, and they're right in line with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to get the picture that these are the areas of my life that are holding me back. And then when I got done reading some of those books, I remember on 55 that I was doing this. It says, in a miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. So something's in me. We finally saw that the faith in some kind of God was part of our makeup, just as much as feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly. That means uncover, discover, discard for me. We had to search fearlessly, so steps 4 through 10. I got to get out of the way so I can build a relationship with my God, right? And that's what's happened for me since January. It's just happened. That's why I'm on fire right now, right? Catch me in year 10 and see where I'm at. Hey, Glenn, remember what you said in that speaker meeting, dude? Yeah, hold me accountable, all right? But I'm sharing my experience with you today because I have not arrived. I have to do the work to stay here. And the reason why I share that, because I'm not perfect, man. You know, we get stagnated here, man. Some of us have been around a long time, right? And we just don't do the work, right? We do enough. We do enough to stay here, but we don't really go inside. And I'm here to tell you that going inside has been a beautiful freedom for me. It has been able to put together some of the things in my life that I wasn't expecting. Right? And I'm getting a lot of aha moments this year, man. Because I'm digging, I'm doing the work. And I'm hanging around people like me that are doing the same type of work. So we're building on each other, right? We're building a foundation of trust. We're building a foundation of intimacy. We're building a foundation of love. Not only love for one another, but love inside myself that I never had, that I never experienced because of the abandonment issues, the insecurities that I have, the beatings and all the crap that I've gone through, the panhandling, all that stuff. It's starting to go. It's going away. Because I allowed this God to come into my life and started doing a little bit of meditating. Right? Oh, really? Man, who has time for meditation, man? I got to go to work. I hear that a lot, right? It has saved my life, man. It has built the very foundation and keystone of my existence today. And I mean that. It has turned me on to a place like, man, I was missing out on this. This love this God had for me, I kept it away through prejudice, through outside influences, through my ego, through my pride, all that stuff, right? I kept them at a distance because I didn't want to see the person inside of me. I didn't want that. But today, I'm embracing it, man. That's why I can stand up here today and be on fire about what I'm embracing and what I love today about Alcoholics Anonymous is that you people have shown me how to be a human being, how to trust, how to love myself. You guys loved me for 28 years before I even started to love myself. If you're sitting in here and you feel like you just can't get it or you're stagnating and you don't really know which way to go, I can't really see the time really yet. I want to make sure I don't go over.
Can't tell.
Okay, cool. And you don't really know where you're at in the process, I just encourage you to get honest with your sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, 5 minutes. 10 minutes then. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. No. And get a sponsor who knows the book, who can enlighten you, who can help you understand that there are directions in this book. I don't have time to go through them all, but they're there. I know where they are. Thank you, God, for allowing somebody in my life, and you put them in my life to show me the way to say, hey, get busy on this workshop. It'll teach you the book like you've never seen it before. It's called Unpacking the Mysteries of the Big Book. And I'm not a big book thumper. I'm telling you right now, I'm not. But it enlightened me. It helped me do stuff in my life that I wasn't looking at, which opened the door for me to read these other books that I'm working on now. Right, I read four of them. Don Miguel Ruiz is the author. He wrote the Four Agreements, the Five Agreements. He's Mastery of Love, and the one I'm working on now is The Voice of Knowledge. And they're great books. They've helped me find my voice. And I didn't have a voice. I had insecurities. And today I have a voice. You know? I have that integrity when you're not looking that I'm doing the right thing. I don't have to call my sponsor as much. Who knew? Right? Because in my first year, I was calling all, yeah, he used to call me. What are you doing right now? Oh, I hated that. Because he knew. He couldn't leave me alone for too long. You know? The book doesn't lie, you know? And I am on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that God's got a plan for me today. Yeah, I don't have a lock on my insecurities. I don't have a lock on my judgment. I don't have a lock on my defenses, right? But they're way better than they used to be. I'm not the same guy when I got here. When I got here, I was so broken, I couldn't walk across the room with my head up. Right? And you people helped me. You helped me to see the light in my life. Right? Through working the process of recovery, it opened some doors for me to build a relationship with my higher power that I choose to call God today. And, you know, it's okay. It's there. If you don't believe it's okay, that spirit's in you. You know, it's there. It's all you have to do is be willing to explore it a little bit. And once I started to explore it and give up, say, okay, show me the way, like it says in chapter 5, we stood at the turning point. You know how many turning points I've been at since I started this journey? A bunch. Because you know why? I have a spiritual awareness in me now, an instinct that says, okay, you ought not do that. Hey, that's not really the road you should go back down on because it's going to be fire and things. You know? Today I have that. I'm grateful for that. I love Alcoholics Anonymous because it is the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm connecting with the person inside today that I didn't see. The uncover, the discover is great, but the discard is really important. If I don't discard the garbage that's holding me back from becoming the person and allowing this experience with the joy of God in my life, I'm losing it now. I'm not getting it. I'm getting a very small part of it. You know, and it all starts with unity, service, and recovery, right? The triangle. You guys show me how to get out of self, how to do the next indicated right thing, how to find a loving God as he expresses himself in a group process. You guys show me that. Because it works in you. And the only thing I know is that I have to see it to believe it. Right? I'll end with this. My relationship with my son today is amazing. I have a wonderful boy. He's out there, has one of the best lives, you know, today. And we talk on the phone for 30, 40, an hour, hour and a half sometimes, just about whatever. He knows me inside and out. I know him inside and out. It has broken down the laws of the barriers of communication. I have a soul today. He has a soul today. And I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous because it is in the number. It's an inside job. So I can get something from my friend Nate. I can get something from my friend Billy, from my friend Lee. I can now look at women in a whole different light because I've learned how to work on those insecurities that were in me. I can treat them with respect. I can hold my head up high and look you in the eye today because I found my voice. Thanks for letting me share.